And we welcome you back to Recovery Coast to Coast, live from the studios of K-Life, AM 1590, and broadcast nationally in streaming audio at recoverycoasttocoast.org. Jody S. is joining us here in hour number two. Also, we'll have some words of wisdom from Dick Van Dyke coming up in about a half an hour from right now. Jody S., 16 years in recovery, and in keeping with the 11th and 12th traditions, we only use first names, so it is simply Jody S. Jody, good evening and welcome to Recovery Coast to Coast.
Good evening, Neil.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great tonight.
Good. My co-host tonight, Brian Ackler. Brian, take it away.
Jody, thanks for coming down here, sharing your story with us tonight, and let's start at the beginning. Let's go all the way back to when this first started for you. When did you have your first drink? Do you remember?
Oh, God, it's kind of hard to remember exactly my first drink. I guess if I was really to actually just really give some thought to it, I would think maybe as a teenager, kind of like experimenting with friends in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
More for just kind of the party life.
For kicks, I guess, and
yeah, for
being
kicks.
Out with the buddies and the ladies. And
yeah, I'd say that. You know, to impress the girls, kind of like fitting in.
Well, most of us have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So what made it different for you? When did it take a different turn?
You know, that's hard to say, but if I was to say, for myself, I would think that there was just a time where you're just the overindulgence. And, you know, they talk a lot about in recovery, and I learned these things being in recovery, that we at some point kind of like cross this invisible line between just experimental use for recreational purposes, where we go into having a dependency on drugs or alcohol. And I would think that I crossed that invisible line I started drinking, say, maybe around 16 years old. And maybe in my early 20s, I began to start crossing that line where it became more so that I was drinking more habitually than when I had began, when it was just recreational use.
So what was the difference for you? Say you were drinking on weekends at parties, and then you say you crossed that line. What entailed that line crossing?
What seemed to happen for me, and these are things that I had learned as I came into the recovery process, is that I went from drinking and experimental use of drugs as just a recreational thing. Then I began to start using in order for me to just, I was living two lifestyles. I was living a straight life as a young man, working, you know, 9 to 5, and then living a life with my younger friends at the time where I was up all hours of the night. And so the using and the drinking was more so for me to actually indulge in that nightlife.
Mm.
And at some point it was actually to help me to stay, funny as it was to help me to stay awake and alert. For that nightlife. And at some point I began to start using and drinking. It just seemed to just grab hold of me, where I was now not only using and drinking just to maintain in both of these lifestyles, to be able to stay awake all hours of the night, but I was using and drinking as a way to actually function in both of these lifestyles.
You mentioned drugs. What type of drugs were you involved in?
Oh, a lot of stimulants. At that time, we were taking things like mescaline, you know, drugs that would lower my inhibitions, okay, help me to fit in more so with the different crowds that I was hanging out with, cocaine, you know, just all kinds of stimulants at that time.
Mm-hmm. What was the first sign of trouble for you?
Oh, gosh, when I couldn't stop, when it seemed that it was carrying over into what I would say was my normal lifestyle, my day lifestyle. It was beginning to start carrying over into that lifestyle, too. I seemed to have to drink just to get through the day. I seemed to have to drink and use to take the edge off of dealing with people throughout the day. I seemed to have to use and drink just so that I could take some of the anxiety off. That was maybe a direct result of just not sleeping and not getting enough rest, not eating right.
Were there troubles with the law? Did you get in any trouble because of drugs or alcohol?
In the beginning, there was no trouble. I was supporting my habit. At one point, I began to start supporting my habit through regular employment. But, of course, my addiction began to grow to the point where just regular employment and the income that was coming in through regular employment was not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to start doing things that were just way above what the expectations of my own life actually had planned. I began to start to involve myself in all kinds of criminal activities just to, in order for me to get drugs.
Like what?
Well, first it started out with me just selling drugs, okay? I was always trying to make $1 million off of the sale of drugs. You know, my plan was to be able to keep me a stash and to be able to keep enough money that I can continue to re-up. It was this just a dysfunctional dream that if I can just continue to have enough money to continue to keep the drugs coming in, but also to continue to have enough money to take care of my normal lifestyle and to have an apartment. And, you know, it just became just this whole fantasy world.
And it kept growing, and became more.
And it kept growing.
And you were getting high on your own supply.
And it seemed that I was getting more high on my supply than I was actually bringing in an income. And it just seemed to just get just completely out of hand.
Did you get caught?
The drug selling I didn't get caught in, but a lot of the criminal activities around that, I found myself committing robberies, petty thefts, shoplifting, anything that would bring quick money in. My drug use was picking it up at an all-time high, and it got to the point where I couldn't even work anymore. I was terminated from my job because of a criminal activity I involved myself in. Wonderful job, a job with a lot of status, but it just wasn't enough to keep my drug habit going.
We're here with Jody S., who's sharing his story of recovery with us. Mentors, parents, family, friends, how were they involved, and did somebody come to you and say, Jody, I think there's a problem here?
You know, at the time, I can't quite remember. Well, I did have a few people, but at that time, I had a belief system around this drug addiction. Drug addiction, they talk about, is a very, very self-centered disease, okay, and it's a disease of denial. All right, and my thoughts were that I'm just not that bad, and I had people that would tell me, Jody, you are using, I mean, there were friends of mine that used drugs just like I did, but felt like, wow, they didn't want to hang out with me at some point. I was doing too many things too fast, even for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there were people in my life, but this disease being such a self-centered disease, such a self-consuming disease, it wouldn't allow me to hear any of the voices that were telling me just how bad I was.
Anybody take any significant steps to try to get you to see that?
At that time, there was just a lot of discussion from close family members.
How old were you at this time?
Oh, about that time when my drug addiction was really at full blown, I was around 25 years old. Okay, and I come from a single parent family, so I had learned real early how to develop my own opinions and draw my own conclusions about things in life. So I could hear, but not hear, what people were saying. You know, I'd agree what was being said, but at the same time, it just didn't seem to fit, you know, kind of like the idea that I had about who I felt that I was. And so at a really, really young age, I was learning how to develop and draw conclusions, erroneous conclusions in life, but conclusions nevertheless. And they didn't seem erroneous at that time because they really were going, if they were challenged, I had very strong convictions. And my convictions were strong whether I was right or wrong.
You've got quite a personality, too. It seems like you would be pretty good at hiding the habit. Is that something that you
had to do? I was very good at hiding the habit, very, very self-sufficient person. So I was at some point what was considered a functional addict. Very, very self-sufficient. You know, so I could, what we say, fix my outsides. I cleaned up well. I could fix my outsides and they wouldn't actually reflect what was actually going on the inside and the secret lifestyle that I was actually living. I had the trophy girlfriends, and plural meaning more than one, but I had the trophy girlfriends, I had the condominium, I had the nice car, and these were things that I managed to hold on to for some period of time. They didn't last, but I held on to them long enough for me to fool the people that were in my immediate circle.
So you were basically living two lives.
I was basically living two lives, Neil.
Yeah,
to say the least.
What was jail like for you?
Oh, gosh, being in jail, it was as it would be for anybody. You know, it was a wake-up call that here I was, my freedom was taken away from me. It was, in a sense, it was a two-edged sword, okay, because it was also at the same time at that point in my life with drug addiction being such a dominating force in my life, it was a saving grace. I couldn't, you know, I began to suspect that drugs, you know, and I really did, I began to suspect of my own volition that drugs were beginning to be a major problem, that I really didn't have any control over them. And so jail in the beginning was a saving grace for me. I felt it gave me an opportunity because that was the only solution that I actually had. And it didn't become a solution until I was actually locked up. And I was able to see as I sat there in that cell, I realized, wow, being away from the drugs, this is what drugs have actually done to me.
Do you remember the first the first time you heard the clank?
Yes, I remember it. It was yesterday. I do.
In the Gray Bar Treatment Center.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And so for a lot of people, for myself especially, and a lot of the guys that, as we had discussions regarding, because at that time, you know, the drug addiction, it was so criminal. So many people were ending up in jail because of drug addiction at the time, or the criminal activity around drug addiction. We were able to have these discussions on how drugs were actually affecting our lives. So for a lot of people, including myself, it was saving grace at the time.
Was there any treatment inside the jail?
At that time, there wasn't. Mm-hmm. There wasn't. It may have been just the fact that I was in and out so fast that I wasn't privileged to the opportunities at that time if there was treatment inside of the jails. I have known that at some point when I was able to spend great lengths of time, more than 30 days, that there has always been, there has been for a while, treatment inside of the at least the prison systems where I ended up at, mm-hmm. and inside of some of the jails also.
How much time did you do, Jody?
I'd say it was a lot of short stints, 30 days here, maybe for stealing, shoplifting. The longest time I spent was the 22 months. And at spending those 22 months, that was the time that I really had an opportunity
Where was that? Was that in Monroe? Or was
In California.
Oh, in California.
In California penal systems. And at that time, that was the time that I really got an opportunity to just take a look mm-hmm. at what had actually been going on with me. Prior to that, I had been involved in 12-step groups. Mm-hmm. My involvement, to say the least, was short-lived. Mm-hmm. 30 days clean in one treatment center and a few months in another treatment center. A couple months in another treatment center. So I had exposure to the 12-step philosophy and what treatment was about.
We're going to take a short time out. We will continue our discussion with Jody S., 16 years in recovery. The program is Recovery Coast to Coast. Let me tell you about some of the things coming up. We're going to be talking to the author of The Harder They Fall, a series of profiles of famous people in addiction. Ken Stark will be joining us from the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse. And we're also going to do a program on gambling addiction. Right after Neil Scott, along with you until midnight tonight.
Teenage alcoholism. It sounds scary to a dad, especially if you believe your son or daughter has the problem. Chemical dependency is a serious problem, but there is hope and help if you call Sundown M Ranch. Sundown has a treatment program designed especially for young people. Teen alcoholism and drug addiction can be treated successfully. At Sundown M Ranch, it happens every day. Call 457-0990, 457-0990.
Recovery Coast to Coast is a program feature of the nonprofit Alliance for Recovery. Recovery Coast to Coast is on the air thanks to the generosity of our friends and listeners. Now, if you're enjoying Recovery Coast to Coast and would like to help us to continue to carry the message of hope and the promise of recovery, you can make a tax-deductible contribution to the Alliance for Recovery at P.O. Box 31451, Seattle, Washington 98103. Or you can donate through PayPal at www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. Thank you in advance for your support.
Recovery Coast to Coast is not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, ACOA, or any other 12-step or similar program. We do attempt to observe the traditions and intent of these organizations, respecting their success and longevity. Recovery Coast to Coast endeavors to protect the personal anonymity of our callers, especially insofar as our involvement in any 12-step program is concerned.
Oh, it's nice to have you with us tonight on Recovery Coast to Coast. I'm Neil Scott, along with Brian Apker. You know, if you're interested in telling your story of experience, strength, and hope, or would like to suggest a guest, send us an email at recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. Recovery Coast to Coast, the only program in America on the air 5 nights a week, 2 hours a night, talking about addiction with a focus on recovery. And we're talking to Motown Jody. We just found out that he's from the Motor City. And it made a little geographic down to California, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Why was that, Jody?
You know, the reason I went to California, I was in Detroit, Michigan, and I was just the crime and the criminal activity and the indulgence in drug addiction. And what I was doing was I was looking for a way out. And I felt that if I left the state, that maybe I could get me a new start. Mm-hmm. So I felt California would be a good place to go. And my thoughts were, there's no drugs in California. It's the Sunshine State.
And come on, Jordan. Come on. You're talking to Neil now. Come on. No drugs in California?
Really, no drugs in California. Those were my thoughts.
All right.
It just shows you can't run from drugs and alcohol.
That's right. That's right, Brian.
No matter how far you go.
Would you go to L.A.?
Well, I landed in San Diego first, and I was working for a car dealership. And, of course, I felt that if I just smoked a little weed, something, you know, maybe tapered down from the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And I knew nothing about addiction at the time. Okay. Yeah. No involvement with treatment centers, anything that is at some point in my journey towards recovery gave me information to help me to see the error of my ways. So I landed in San Diego, and of course, my troubles just started right up in San Diego.
How old were you at that point, Jody?
I guess I was around 27 at that time.
Yeah.
Still a young man.
Yeah. And still on that path, that progression downward.
Yes. So we found out the geographics didn't help. What I learned later was that it was a geographic.
And there were some drugs in San Diego, weren't there?
Oh, there was plenty of drugs in San Diego, and oddly enough, I was able to find them
rather quick.
Yeah.
So you started out socially drinking. It progressed into something that flowed over into your everyday life and maintenance. Then you had to take up illegal activities to keep up the habit. You went to jail, did some time. What was the most significant thing that happened to you on the bad end of the spectrum during this period of time?
Well, when you ask me about the bad end, you know, I found myself actually making decisions. I mean, I felt like I had completely lost my mind. I started out a young man with a lot of potential. I came from a family. It was a single family home, but my mom instilled in us strong work ethics. So, you know, I was really, really struggling with just this conscious struggle with, here you are, you're living way above the expectations of your family. You're living way above your own expectations. And I found myself in downtown Los Angeles just living in warehouses. And it got so bad, I knew I'd lost my mind when I found myself living in a warehouse and thinking to myself, this would be a very nice place for me to live if I just put some curtains up. And the thing about drugs is drugs just completely change your perception, where boxes begin to start looking like love seats and things like that. So I knew there was something that, you know, something told me, you're losing your mind. You have lost your mind. And it just, the shame of my life just hit me full force. Mm. What I had actually become just hit me full force.
Was there a moment of clarity?
It was what we call a moment of clarity. Yeah. And I realized that, you know, wow, look, how have you gotten here? How have you gotten here? This was not what you signed up for. This was not what your family had planned for you. This is not even what you want for yourself, but you're here. And oddly enough, I didn't know any way out.
Mm. Had you been in treatment at this point?
I had not been in treatment at this point. Mm-hmm. And this was, at the time, my first introduction to treatment. Shortly after that, a lot of other people in the streets were talking about going into the missions in downtown Los Angeles. And I didn't make a conscious decision to go into treatment as much as I made a conscious decision to just go into this mission And what happened is that I was then introduced. I was told that they had not only a place for a person to sleep and a place for a person to get a meal, but they also had a treatment center that treated people that felt like they may have problems with drugs and alcohol. And I signed up.
And what was that like for you?
It was really an eye-opening experience, to say the least. I was able to learn, and I was able to learn just the nature of what I was dealing with, which was actually a start on the road to recovery. And I was able, you know, it's sort of like, how can you be found if you don't know how lost you are? And I was able really to see with a clear head just how lost I had become and actually how I had gotten there. Some of the, you know, the attitudes that I had picked up along the way. You know, my shame with not meeting my own expectations and how that continued to trap me. It was almost like they taught us a lot about this vicious cycle of shame, guilt, using and drinking in order to cover up the shame, guilt, more shame and guilt, and using to cover up the shame and the guilt.
And round and round.
And round and round and round.
Were you in touch with your family during this time?
No, at this time, as I stated, I left Detroit, Michigan, and my thoughts were not only to get away from the drugs, go someplace where I thought there weren't any drugs, but also to get away from the reflection of shame and guilt that I felt was from me not being able to meet up to the expectations, which were not unrealistic, but just the expectations that my family had of myself. I'm the oldest son, oldest grandson, I'm the oldest cousin, and I'm the oldest nephew. Did I say the oldest son in the family of three? And so I felt like my thoughts as a young man, I had developed these thoughts that I should be living a much better life, showing a much better example than what I actually was. So I left for those reasons also, that I not bring shame on my family.
So you had three boys in the family?
Actually, it's a brother, a younger brother, younger sister.
Younger sister.
Yes, I'm the oldest of three.
Uh-huh. Did they ever run into trouble with drugs and alcohol?
My sister, fortunately enough, no, has never had a problem with drugs or alcohol. Knock on wood. And my brother, yes, my brother has. And my brother's been in recovery for a while.
He has?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So you're in recovery down there in the Mission. That's your first exposure.
That was my first exposure to the recovery process. And I stayed there for several months. And, of course, being a young man who had... And what I learned is that addiction is more than just the not using. I mean, addiction is more than just the use of drugs.
Right, right.
Okay, there's a lot of...
And recovery is a lot more than just not using.
And recovery, right. Recovery is a lot more than just simple abstinence. It's actually a challenge. Allow yourself to be challenged. And that's the key there, is allowing yourself to be challenged on a lot of the belief systems regarding a lot of the shame, a lot of the guilt, a lot of the belief systems coming
they
up regarding
not,
the self-sufficiency.
You learn not to should on yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I should
it's
do
well
this,
said.
I should do that.
Well said. And how to actually get past those shoulds into a program of action.
Yeah.
And that it takes a lot of action. You know, there's a statement in our recovery process that says you can't think your way into a new way of living. You have to live your way back into a new way of thinking. You begin to start doing things that bring a lot of esteem into your life. And that's difficult when you're concentrating in on all the low self-esteem issues and all the shame. So constant encouragement has been one of the keys in my recovery. Constant encouragement from people that have pushed me and challenged my beliefs, challenged my old beliefs regarding shame, guilt, my potentials, the ability to be able to reach goals that I set once again.
Did you stay sober?
The first time around, no. Second time around,
what,
no.
What happened when you got out of that treatment center?
What happened when I got out of the treatment center is that, of course, I went back to a lot of my old belief systems. Okay, I didn't pick up, take a lot of the suggestions, which was that I should have sponsorship.
You were still in control. It was still Jody's world.
It was still into what Jody thought that Jody. I came into this recovery process, and I found this out, is that I had two strong character traits about me. I had strong convictions about things when I was right, and I had strong convictions about things when I was wrong.
It sounds deadly.
And so what happened is that I came out and I thought that I would, of course, develop a program that I felt like any man should be, that was with the greatest intentions. Any man should put together in order to put his life back together. And I began to start kind of revising the steps that I had learned. And my steps were get a woman with a car and a house.
And a good job.
And a good job.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That all I needed to do was come back up and retrieve my things.
All right, we're talking to Jody S. tonight in hour number two on Recovery Coast to Coast, sharing his experience, strength, and hope, talking about what it was like for him, what happened, and what it's like now, 16 years in recovery. The program is Recovery Coast to Coast, on the air every night, Monday through Friday, from 10 until midnight. Always talking about addiction, always putting a focus on recovery. Neil Scott, along with Brian Apker, we are here until midnight tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. Our email address, recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. A short time out, we'll be right back.
In the confusing world of home financing, with all the different programs, costs, and interest rates, there is one company that cuts through the confusion and finds the loan that is right for you, America One Finance. Whether you're credit challenged or not, America One Finance has the expertise and resources to get the right loan that best meets your needs. So for residential, construction, or commercial loans, America One Finance is the company you can trust. Over 25 years experience. Call America One today at 888-698-5225. America One Finance.
If you know of recovery-oriented activities in the King, Pierce, or Snohomish counties, please let us know so we can pass the information along to our listeners. Send an email to recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. We will announce them free of charge on a space-available basis. Again, that email address is recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net, or call the Alliance for Recovery at area code 206-783-8850.
Hi, this is Mark Anthony Farad, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. So choose a designated driver. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
How I long to hear you sing beneath the clear blue skies.
A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
Recovery Coast to Coast is not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, ACOA, or any other 12-step or similar program. We do attempt to observe the traditions and intent of these organizations, respecting their success and longevity. Recovery Coast to Coast endeavors to protect the personal anonymity of our callers, especially insofar as their involvement in any 12-step program is concerned.
And we are back on Recovery Coast to Coast, live from the studios of K-Life, AM 1590, and broadcast nationally in streaming audio at www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. Some of the upcoming programs, we're going to be talking to Gary Stromberg. He wrote a book called The Harder They Fall. It is a series of stories of people in recovery, including Dr. John, Grace Slick, the boxer Jerry Cooney, Chuck Negron, Paul Williams, Representative Ramstedt, and many, many others. Fascinating stuff. Ken Stark is going to join us in the studio. He is the director of the Division of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse down in Olympia. Rock musician Dallas Taylor is going to join us to talk about his recovery and share some of his new music. He's got a brand new CD out, just sent it to me. Had it playing on the CD player at home this afternoon, the Taylor Neely Band. I'll bring that in and play a couple of cuts for you. We're also going to focus on heroin treatment. Ron Jackson will be in the studio. He's from the Evergreen Treatment Program. And Joe Guppy and I are going to be talking to local rock and roll writer Charles Cross, who's written a number of books. He wrote a book about Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix. So a lot of things coming up on Recovery Coast to Coast. But tonight, front and center, it is Jody S. talking about his sobriety, 16 years in recovery, going into the treatment center. Actually, it was a mission, and it was a place to really kind of dry out and get an introduction into this world of recovery. But you go out and you decide that, well, you know, there's the 12 steps and there's Jody's steps, and I'm going to try Jody's first. what happened?
Must have seemed more appealing at the time, but they didn't work, of course. But as I said, you know, my strong convictions about things when I was right, when I was wrong. So what I did is I came out to Mission, and of course I tried to put my life back together with greatest intentions, but I wasn't doing and following some of the directions and using the information that the 12 steps program had actually given me. And this 12-step program was, I was introduced to it through this Mission. So I kind of, you know, kind of floated around, and of course, eventually I went back to drug use. All right, I ended up in Oakland, California, and things got even worse.
You're kind of working
there.
Your way up the coast.
Yeah,
here.
Kind of
working
my way up
San Diego, we go down to the Missions
no
in
drugs,
LA.
No drugs in Oakland,
of
so I think I go to Oakland, California.
Right.
So I ended up in Oakland, California. I had some family out there, and I figured that I'd kind of touch bases with them.
Yeah, another geographic.
Yeah,
right.
Another geographic. And what happened is that due to the fact that I was I was on parole at the time from Detroit, Michigan for a petty crime, I had left the state without permission. I felt I'd go get my life together in California, come back to Detroit, Michigan, and take care of it. Okay, strong convictions when I'm wrong. And so I ended up in California, and I was stopped by the police. I had committed a crime in San Diego. I'd stolen a car from a place where I was working, and the reason being is because, well, of course, I didn't have bus fare.
And the car was there.
And the car was there. And I was stopped in the car, charged with stolen car, and released. And so for another month, I just kind of bummed around Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm. You were drinking and using again.
Drinking and using again. And I was stopped again. And once more, saving grace for me. In and out of treatment centers in the Bay Area. And I was stopped one night by the police just walking. I was just walking and asked for my identification. Gave my identification to them. And they informed me at that time, well, you have a warrant for your arrest in Detroit, Michigan for leaving the state without permission. And you also have a warrant for your arrest for this stolen vehicle. Mm-hmm. I was booked into the Alameda County Jail. And 22 months later, after spending 8 months, I was sentenced to 8 months for the stolen car in San Diego, California, and given 12 months for leaving the state without permission. And, of course, they weren't too happy about the stolen car in California. So the board, the parole board gave me 12 months incarceration in Detroit, Michigan. So extradited back from California to Detroit, Michigan.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow. And so you went back to Detroit and did how much time there?
12 months.
And then what happened when you got out?
What happened is during the time that I was in prison, mm-hmm, during the 8 months, of course, I became involved in the what they had coming in. One of the 12-step groups had what was called H&I, which,
sure,
is hospitals and institutions.
Absolutely.
I had some exposure to the 12-step groups, and I was able to see how they could actually work in my life. And I had decided that through attending these H&I meetings and the exposure that I had that prompted me to attend the 12-step meetings that were in the inside of prison, I had decided that I would begin to start taking their suggestion.
Now, wait a second here, because here's a question I have. I have heard that it is as easy, if not easier, to get drugs in prison.
Oh, it's
and
right.
It seems to me that would be one place where if somebody was going to use, they would want to be on drugs all the time to get away
you're,
from
you're
it.
Absolutely right, Brian. You're absolutely right. And so I give myself a pat on the back that I didn't use, but also I give a lot of credit to the H&I coming in and continuously encouraging us that it's not going to work inside of here. It's not going to work outside. They talked a lot about the support that we would be needing. They kept us focused. We began to start forming groups, me and a couple of guys that were actually also interested in the 12-step philosophy, and we began to start kind of like congregating with each other. And that was the first time that I got a chance to actively do what was being suggested, which was to work the steps while I was inside.
Did you do a fourth step when you
were there? And what I did is that I did a fourth step, and it was, I think the fourth step for me was saving grace also, because it gave me an opportunity to actually step back, take a look at all these patterns and these belief systems that I had begun to start, real dysfunctional belief systems that I began to start developing in my life, and how I began to start and why I began to start developing, and how drugs and alcohol were playing a role in really distorting my belief systems. Okay. And how some of the belief systems were really, really useless and dysfunctional in themselves. Like, you know, how I actually go about, dealing with relationships with women, how I go about dealing with relationships with other men, okay, my place in people's lives, unrealistic expectations that I had of myself.
Mm-hmm. And so through these H&I meetings inside the joint, you're able to start putting some fairly solid recovery base together.
Yeah, 22 months inside of the state penitentiaries before I came home. And upon coming home, I took one of the best suggestions from them that I could have taken in my recovery is that I allowed myself to have some accountability by getting a sponsor.
What was it like when you got out of prison? Here you've been in prison for 22 months. That has been your world. Now you're outside with all of the old stuff. They say that, you know, the only thing you need to change is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are in a situation where you're out of jail and you got to start your life.
You know, for me, it was almost a two-edged sword. I was frightened, but at that point, I had nothing really to lean on. And I knew that I would be safe if I just didn't completely and totally depend upon myself as the last and final decision in anything that I did. I was self-sufficient enough to know that I could get a job, okay? I could find a relationship, someone that could support me. Preferably a young lady. I could find some help. I knew that. But I had also decided, so I wasn't really afraid, you know, because I had self-sufficiency. So what I did is I had decided that I would get very, very close and personal to the program, that I didn't take a casual approach at my drug addiction. These are the things that I learned, and I was not going to take a casual approach with my recovery. And so I just involved myself from day one in the recovery process. I made it to meetings. I got a sponsor instantly. My second day home, when I was able actually to get out of the halfway house, I got a sponsor at a meeting, and it was a guy that seemed to be, he had a story in the meetings that I went to, and his story ended on a happy note, whereas my thoughts would have been to do something a little bit different than what he would have did at the end of the story that he was telling. And I said, this guy would be a good sponsor for me.
And did it work? Did you stay
it
sober?
It did work. It did work. And from that point forward, I decided coming out of prison that I would not be on speaking terms with myself. That I would allow somebody else to influence me.
Stay out of your own way?
At least stay out of my own way.
Yeah.
And at least, even my best thinking, I would at least run it by somebody. Even after I had the answer, I'd at least run it by somebody.
Yeah.
So you made the conviction to yourself to do that. So your strong convictions actually had paid off for you in the end.
They most certainly did. And I decided to just make, you're right, you're absolutely right. I had made a commitment that I would, I've tried everything else. I definitely tried doing things the way I felt like I should do them with the greatest intent, and they didn't work, that I would make a commitment in the recovery process.
And did you stay, have you been in recovery ever since?
And 16 years later, I've been able to stay clean.
Wow.
16 and a half, actually, Neil.
All right, we're going to take a short time out. We'll come back and continue talking to Jody. Talk about the good stuff, the 16 years, what I call the bright side of alcoholism, which is indeed recovery. It is Recovery Coast to Coast on the air every night, Monday through Friday from 10 until midnight. And we invite you to keep in touch with us at Recovery Coast to Coast at Comcast.net. I'm Neil Scott. He's Brian Akron. Nice to have you along tonight. We're going to take a short time out, and we will continue our story with Jody right after this. The Java Zone, Seattle's most popular clean and sober coffee shop, now featuring great lattes, smoothies, chai, tea, Italian sodas, and more. Plus an array of fresh sandwiches made to order. It's a gathering place for people in recovery, where you can listen to music, play pool, or challenge the original Pac-Man. Java Zone, conveniently located at 7811 Aurora North, not far from the Fremont Fellowship. Make the Java Zone your recovery zone. It's open until 8 most nights and until 10 Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you know of recovery-oriented activities in the King, Pierce, or Snohomish counties, please let us know so we can pass the information along to our listeners. Send an email to recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. We will announce them free of charge on a space-available basis. Again, that email address is recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. Or call the Alliance for Recovery at area code 206-783-8850.
Recovery Coast to Coast is not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, ACOA, or any other 12-step or similar program. We do attempt to observe the traditions and intent of these organizations, respecting their success and longevity. Recovery Coast to Coast endeavors to protect the personal anonymity of our callers, especially insofar as their involvement in any 12-step program is concerned.
We welcome you back to Recovery Coast to Coast. I'm Neil Scott. He's Brian Apker. We're talking about recovery with Jody S., who has been in recovery since leaving the Gray Bar Treatment Center in Detroit. Talk about how good it has gotten for you and the progression of that goodness that we call recovery.
You know, they told me coming in that if I made a list of what I expect, I'd shortchange myself. And it is, that has been one of the most truest statements that I've actually been able to live in this recovery process. Things have gotten so good in recovery. And it's been a direct result of allowing myself to be influenced more. This kid that just so much self-sufficiency, no dependence upon anything other than myself. Even when myself began to start, kind of losing track of who I actually was and what I had started out to be. And so by being influenced and allowing myself to actually, have my thought processes impacted by someone else, I've been able to learn how to have a little bit more faith in it, in let's say in the universe as a whole, that it's not me against the world. Okay, it's not my need. I don't have to try to survive. I don't have to have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't have to live up to unrealistic expectations that I place upon myself. And so I've been able to actually, by allowing myself, recovery, in a sense, my brain has somewhat been, well, that would be too harsh to say. I almost said my thought process has been a lazy thought process. I've just been spoiled in this recovery process. As I've asked, you know, been open to asking the questions, I've gotten all the answers. There's a statement that we say, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. Anything that you have on your mind, any direction you're trying to go, you can get the answers. If you're willing to practice some humility, and humility meaning just the ability to be able to say, hey, I'm not always clear on what's happening. And one of the hardest things for a person, at least myself in recovery, to do is to say, hey, I'm not clear on something. Because it's easier to act like you know the answer already.
Mm, yeah, that's a natural instinct for most people.
Well, thank you, Brian, for clarifying that. And it's so easy to go there. But for a recovering person, it's a dangerous direction to go in, because self-sufficiency for us, at least for myself, and I continue to make these corrections because I don't want to set myself up to speak for all recovering people. But I was able to identify, and that was one of the most important, another important direction that I was given, to look at similarities, not differences, to really, really connect with the fact that what I'm going through is not a unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if my drug and my dysfunctional thought process is not a unique experience, then the solution would not be a unique experience. That all I needed to do was identify with people who had similar issues like myself, and they would show me how to have to gain the similar solutions. And so it's just been little things like which were seem to be big things, because the mind of a recovering person is to magnify at times issues, make mountains out of molehills. And issues like going back to school. I was 29 years old, and as God is my witness, I felt like I was too old to go back to school.
Did you really? That's
yes,
interesting,
Brian, I most certainly did.
A lot of folks are trying to get back to school at that age now, and you felt like you were too old.
And I really had the conviction that I was too old to go back to school. And this issue was connected with, you had an opportunity, You see the dysfunctional stuff that comes in. You had the opportunity. It's too late.
You don't deserve it.
You don't deserve it. Mm. And so it was at the prompting of friends, a sponsor, as I began to start sharing that these were the thoughts that I was having. And they say for us as recovering people that honesty is an antidote to our disease thinking, and that if we at least talk about what we believe is going on, then we can get the feedback that impacts us. And I was able to go back to school. I was convinced that you're not too old. Go down once more, not thinking my way into this new way of living, but acting my way. Go down, look at the campus, and you'll see that there's people your age. And so I went down and looked at the campus, and I'll be darned if there weren't people my age there. So real simple solutions. It sounds simplistic for some, but for a recovering person, having all those attachments to the shame and the guilt and unrealistic expectations, not knowing that it's normal to think these things, we hide these things, and these things begin to start becoming belief systems for us, and these belief systems become these fantasies, and we begin to start creating these worlds that we really believe. Mm-hmm. Based upon all this junk and garbage that we brought in, that these truths that we have are the ultimate truths. So there's a need for a lot of outside influence, a lot of outside influence. But, of course, also on the part of the recovering person, there is a need to actually want to be influenced. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to invite people in. And those are some of the issues that we talk a lot about as part of the recovery process, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness.
Who has been the most influential person in your recovery?
I would say my sponsor, the man that has actually sponsored me. Another friend of mine that has passed away since. I met a very long time ago who had faith and a belief. He was a person that wasn't connected with drug and alcohol, but had this real empathetic view. So it was good because there's a lot of comparison with the recovering person with what we call the normal person. And he had this real, real empathetic view, even though he had not actually been through. And it gave me an opportunity to see that the outside, he felt more like a representative of the outside world, because I felt like this undercover person that was set apart from the rest of the world at that time. And I remember him telling me as if it was yesterday, "Jody, the only reason why I haven't indulged in drug addiction is because I probably would have liked it." And he made it, he gave me some sense of that. With that statement, it gave me some sense of normalcy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That I wasn't this monster, but that I was just a person that had just indulged and it just went too far.
Mm-hmm. What has been the highlight of your recovery in 16 years?
My ability to go back to school and get my degree. I've had the opportunity to go back to school. I have a master's degree. And for a short period of time, I worked on a PhD, but my ability to go back to school and work on my master's degree, it's given me an opportunity to, in the field that I've gone into, to actually give back, to have a purpose that is more than just money, property, and prestige. With those things that I felt were the things that were missing in my life for so long, and never feeling like I could get enough money, enough property, and prestige, but the self-centeredness of our disease is that continuously striving for the very things that is the that tend to be our problem. Money, property, and prestige in its own right not being the problem, but our continued striving for those as a means of fulfilling ourselves was the problem. And so going back to school,
I was going to ask you, what is that field? What have you been studying?
I've been in the social work. Mm-hmm. I started out chemical dependency. And I felt that was a way for me to actually give back. And mm-hmm. then I went into social work and was able to go into the human services field in itself and give back in so many ways. I've worked in...
To help others.
Yes, yes. I've worked in... I was for a while the director of a behavioral health program for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I was able to actually influence not only a staff that we're working with, influencing these teenagers, but being able to be on the front line at times too, to influence the lives of teenagers who are suffering from drug alcohol.
When you were in your darkest moments in Detroit in prison, did you ever possibly imagine that it would be like this good?
this was beyond my wildest. This was way beyond my dreams. I heard other people, but of saying that a lot of times we used a lot of cliches, and one was yet, meaning you're eligible too. But in spite of that, at that point, I couldn't even begin to dream that I would have the opportunities that I have today, that I would be courageous enough to even step up to the plate to indulge in the opportunities that I've had today.
How many meetings a week do you go to now?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I sponsor a lot of guys, mm-hmm. and sponsor them with the same kind of techniques that were taught to me, that we challenge beliefs. We don't challenge each other's manhood, but we do challenge each other's beliefs a lot. And I make quite a few meetings a week. I go to maybe 5 meetings a week on average.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for the opportunities, not only to just be refreshed myself, but also they say you can't keep what you have unless you give it away, but also the opportunity to be a service.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statement in one of the 12 traditions of our 12-step program that talks about our primary purpose being to carry the message and to help the still sick and suffering alcoholic or addict. And so I take that very seriously.
We're talking to Jody S., 16 years in recovery and getting better every day. It really is a miracle what you have accomplished.
Well, thank you.
In a relatively short period of time, and it goes to show that there is no such thing as a hopeless alcoholic, a hopeless addict.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
I mean, you were down in the streets, down in near 8th and Figueroa in downtown Los Angeles. Bad place. You've come a long way.
Bad place, and you know it.
A bad place. And looking back over that, what is your relationship now with your family?
Oh, my relationship is very close with my family. I was able to talk to my brother about drug and alcohol addiction on a level where I didn't seem so much hypocritical. And a lot of empathy with my brother. I also I have a close relationship with my mom. She just moved here from San Diego and is doing well. Can you believe a woman of her age, and she's in trucking school? I'm very proud of her.
Keep on trucking, Mom. All right, we're going to take a short time out. We'll wrap things up with Jody S. right after this brief commercial break. This is Recovery Coast to Coast. Every night, Monday through Friday, live from the studios of K-Life and nationally on recoverycoasttocoast.org. He's Brian Apker. I'm Neil Scott. That's Jody S., and we're here till midnight tonight talking about the miracle that is recovery. Thank you for joining us tonight. Stick around. We'll be back in a moment.
Teenage alcoholism. It sounds scary to a dad, especially if you believe your son or daughter has the problem. Chemical dependency is a serious problem, but there is hope and help if you call Sundown M Ranch. Sundown has a treatment program designed especially for young people. Teen alcoholism and drug addiction can be treated successfully. At Sundown M Ranch, it happens every day. Call 457-0990, 457-0990.
Oh, Recovery Coast to Coast, live from the studios of K-Life. We are here every single night. We have a program upcoming on gambling addiction, and we invite you to tell your friends to join us as well. In the short time that we have left, Jody, what do you say to someone out there who's still struggling with it, still playing with it, still doing it their way?
That there is hope, and hope does start with the surrender, and it's difficult when you just don't know that there is a need to surrender. But I would just would say, if I could, is that there is hope, that there is hope. There's people and there's places. The 12-step groups have been, for myself, a saving grace. And if you've lost everything, what more would you have to lose by trying them?
Mm. You are indeed living proof that people can maintain long-term recovery.
Thank
but, you know, it's all about one day at a time.
It is about one day at a time.
We talked about that when you came in the studio, when Brian and I were discussing before you went on the air, in terms of length of sobriety. The person who got up earliest this morning has the longest sobriety, because it's all about what happens in this gift that we have of 24 hours.
Exactly. How willing you are to actually, without a casual approach, but a very, very formal approach, how willing are you on any given day to deal with the disease of addiction. It's a constant disease. It's a disease that never goes away. And when we talk about the disease of addiction, we're talking about a force that, regardless of where it came from, it is there. That is more important than where it came from, is that some of us do have it.
Any compulsion to use today?
You know, no, not really a compulsion to use. There's been circumstances that actually will bring it up, but thank God for recovery, that it gives me something to fall back on. I have reference on falling back on the solution when a compulsion comes up. Remember, we deal with a disease.
I appreciate you sharing that so openly, so honestly. Brian, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Neil Scott. Dasvidaniya.
You're listening to Recovery Coast to Coast, a program feature of the nonprofit Alliance for Recovery. Recovery Coast to Coast is heard nightly from 10 p.m. till midnight, Monday through Friday, on 1590 a.m. KLIVE in Seattle, and broadcast in streaming audio on the Internet. For information about future programs, as well as information about the Alliance for Recovery, please visit www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. Please join us next time when we share experience, strength, and hope with others so that they may recover from alcohol and other drug and behavioral addictions. The bright side of addiction is recovery.